Hello and welcome to the Great Lakes Analytics and Sports Conference Sports Analytics Podcast. I'm Scott Tappa, Director of the Conference, and I'd like to invite you to attend our event July 13th at the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point. We have a fantastic speaker lineup taking shape. Please visit www.uwsp.edu/analyticsconference to learn more. Today I'm speaking with one of our speakers, Johnny Carver. Johnny is a former manager of basketball analytics for the University of Arkansas men's basketball team, former basketball operations intern for the Indiana Pacers, and author of the book Rankitology. At the Great Lakes Analytics and Sports Conference, Johnny will present Defeating the Stigma of Analytics. Johnny, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Great. So let's just get started. Tell me a little bit about your background. Doing some homework on you, I read that you used to memorize NBA media guides as a kid. Your interest in analytics and basketball in particular got going?
So I actually grew up in a basketball family. So my dad and my brother both played Division I. And, growing up in that kind of family, basketball was the only thing I knew. So, when I was little, I used to read media guides and try to memorize different draft positions and statistics and things like that. And that's really where my love for the NBA grew. And so as I got older, I started playing more competitively, and eventually I lost my playing career to some health issues. And so, after that, I decided to find another outlet for success, and that was to write my book called Rankitology, which is based on a statistical algorithm that I created to determine the greatest player in NBA history. So I wrote that when I was 17 years old, finished it up right before I graduated from high school, and it was released my freshman year of college. So, the past couple of years, I've just been marketing that book and getting experience in the NBA and learning more about this whole basketball analytics thing and what it can provide to different teams.
Sure. So why analytics? Why the analytics area when your playing career was cut short? Why not coaching or training or other? Why did you gravitate towards the analytics angle?
Well, I think it was just different. It was something that, everybody wants to be a coach. Everybody wants to get involved in training. But analytics was something that was relatively new, and there was so much about it that we didn't know yet. And so when I decided to write the book, initially I was just going to write a book about my top 25 greatest players in NBA history. And then I realized, who's going to care about the opinion of a kid who's 17 years old? It's something that everybody has an opinion on. So I wanted to find a way that was different to quantify, the legacy conversation, which is something that people talk about all the time in barbershops. Fans always have these discussions, LeBron versus Michael Jordan, all that kind of stuff. So, once I came up with the idea to run the algorithm, it was something that every time I told somebody about what I was doing, they were extremely interested. And so it just really picked up from there. And I realized that there was an interest both from, fan perspective and from basketball people, because they realized that, these statistics can be used both on the court and they can be used off the court.
Yeah. So how do you go about building that algorithm to rank? I mean, there's been lots of statistics and ways to rank players and teams over the years, but where did you start as a 17-year-old? Did you have a strong math grounding that went there? Did you turn to some experts to help you out? What was your process?
So I had a number of people that I consulted with, but basically the way the algorithm works is that 75 players were chosen in a number of ways. The 50 greatest list that was released by the NBA in 1996. I used each of those 50 players as 50 of the 75 that were included. I also included the other Hall of Fame players at the time that were not on that list, as well as, I believe, 11 current players at that time. I think now many of them have retired, like Kobe Bryant, Jason Kidd. So basically, it was 75 players that were included, and they were compared against each other in 19 categories. These were number of NBA championships, NBA Finals, MVPs, points, rebounds, assists, as well as some defensive metrics. And so once these were compared against each other, basically the lowest score was the best. And so these players were ranked in order from 1 to 75 with the lowest score winning. And, that was where I was able to come up with the top 25 and wrote profiles about each of those top 25 players.
Okay, so from what I understand, MJ is not number one, and Bird and Magic aren't in the top 10. So, you know, that's pretty conventional thinking, is that that MJ is number one all time, and Larry and Magic are top 10. Without, again, giving away the impetus to buy the book and find out the rankings, what was the reaction to those exclusions, or maybe deviations from conventional wisdom on where those guys rank in basketball history?
Well, people are really opinionated about this type of thing. So, you know, there's a lot of people who think that it's Michael Jordan and it's never going to be anybody else. And there are people that are from my age, you know, millennials, we believe that Michael Jordan is the best player, or excuse me, LeBron James. So, sure. You know, everybody else, you know, had an opinion, but you know, when I was arguing my top 10 versus somebody else, what I really wanted were people to attack the algorithm and how I came about the number rather than, you know, the result itself. Because, you know, the way that I tried to do it was as unbiased as possible, to where the numbers, their accomplishments, their achievements were deciding this top 10 rather than someone's opinion. So, you know, if you're going to argue that Michael Jordan was the best player because he could do this on the floor, that's not necessarily relevant to the accomplishment standpoint of what he was able to achieve throughout his career, rather than, you know, just what he was able to produce on the floor itself. So I always say, I think there's a difference between being the greatest and being the best. For example, LeBron James is probably the best player of all time. You know, if you were to create a player in a lab, he would be, you know, 6'8". He would be strong, 250 pounds, able to attack the rim with ease, a pretty good jump shot. And that's basically LeBron James to a T. But greatest is based on accomplishment, you know, number of championships, statistics that you're able to acquire. And so I think that's where the statistics and the algorithm come in. And I think they're a good measurement of legacy.
Yep, definitely. So where can interested listeners buy this book, Johnny?
Yeah, so it's available on Amazon. You just type into Google Rankathology, and it's available on Amazon to buy. We also have an ebook available for, I believe, the iTunes store as well as the Amazon Kindle.
Great. I hope you bring one to Stevens Point next month. I'd like to take a look at that and show it to some of our attendees. So let's talk a little bit about your work at Arkansas. You know, I've read that you did work with SportView. And from my understanding, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but that unlike the NBA, not every college basketball program has SportView. I mean, can you just start by explaining a little bit what that is and what you guys did with it, and how you managed that and worked with the program to have those findings benefit the Razorbacks?
Yeah, without getting too specific, basically what SportView is it's a player tracking system where we are able to analyze what player movements are on the floor and how they affect the overall outcome of the game. So, for example, when a guy is setting a screen, you know, this system that has a number of cameras that are up in the rafters will catch all of these movements and be able to track them and create statistics based on these movements and different things that happen on the floor. So it creates shot charts. It measures performance, player speeds, you know, different shots and shooting attempts and defensive sets that are made on the floor. So it's a really useful tool that the NBA has used. And so now it's being used in a number of college programs, just a select few. And Arkansas happened to be one of those. And I was lucky enough to be able to work with our system for 2 years there at Arkansas. And we used it for a number of things. I can't go into too many specifics about what we did with it. But, you know, it was just a very useful tool for us.
Yeah, you know, it's funny when I've read about SportView, I just remember being blown away by the information and data that it could provide. And then you think, well, how exactly do you use this? And what do you measure? And how do you start measuring it? And how do you draw conclusions from it? I guess who is the driving force at Arkansas for purchasing and implementing this system? And then, you know, what was the process for, again, harvesting that data and then interpreting it in a way that was going to be, you know, provide some sort of edge for your team?
Yeah, no, I have to be careful about what I disclose and what I don't disclose.
Sure,
but
sure.
I will say that, you know, it was something that our coaches definitely utilized. We, you know, tried to look at everything in order to gain an advantage. And so, you know, one of the difficult things for us at the time was that, you know, there aren't very many arenas in the league that had this in the SEC. And there really aren't any in the country at all. So, you know, we were able to only get small sample sizes. And so we feel like we were in the early stages of really understanding what this data could give us and what it provide for us, both short-term and long-term. But at the same time, it was very useful for us, you know, in very specific things that we were looking for our players and, you know, looking at, you know, trends for our guys and what we could do, you know, strategy-wise, more in the long-term effect rather than the short-term effect. You know, it's tough to plan for a team when you don't have any of their data. Right. But at the same time, we were able to improve what we were doing because we had a large enough sample size as the year went on to just kind of, you know, adjust lineups and look at what we were doing, you know, both, you know, and then the long term for one season and for multiple seasons.
Sure. Sorry, I keep asking these questions. I'm not trying to trip you up here. I'm just.
Oh, no, don't worry about it. Not a problem. I usually try to play it on the safe side.
Yeah, I totally understand. So again, same vein then, and I understand if you're under any sort of limitations, but talk to me about what you did with the Pacers and if that was similar or different to what you did at for the Arkansas program.
No, and that's kind of the same thing where I want to make sure I don't disclose too much, but I will say that basically it was more just a general basketball operations internship where I was involved with different departments from scouting to working with the front office directly, working with the people that work in the locker room. So I was able to gain experience beyond just analytics, but, you know, through the entire front office staff and you know, being able to be exposed to different parts of the NBA organization.
Cool. So what can you tell us about what you're doing this summer at Impact? Is that something that's analytics in nature or less so?
Actually, no. It's more in the player development realm. Okay. So I'm able to work with a number of guys that are working out here and, you know, help them evolve their game as they get prepared for the NBA draft, as well as some current NBA players and some prep players that are a little younger. So it really gives me that on-court experience where I'm able to have a ball in my hand and, you know, be able to teach other players and be able to help and learn more about the player development side. I've really wanted to round out my resume and have that basketball experience where I felt like, you know, if I'm having a conversation with a scout, I can really understand what they're saying about, you know, a player's ability rather than just seeing the numbers or, you know, understanding it maybe from like a long-term investment front office perspective. I want to be able to see it from all different angles and surround myself with smart basketball people. And I think that this summer is going to be a great opportunity for me. So.
Yeah, sure. Sounds like it. So hopping back to analytics, if you do get back into that angle, that realm of sports, do you have any, you know, analytics questions in mind, you know, hypotheses to test out, you know, you've already tackled the, you know, ranking the greatest players in NBA history. You know, any projects that you have in mind that you'd like to work on?
Well, one thing I've always been really interested in is trying to find a better defensive metric to measure how effective a player is defensively. So that's something that I think the analytical community has really struggled with. It's really hard to quantify how a player defends because there's so many different ways to offend, right? So, for example, a guy like Rudy Gobert is a good rim protector, but he doesn't necessarily guard on the perimeter. But then, you know, maybe a guy that's smaller, like a Kawhi Leonard, who is a wing player, he's going to guard out on the perimeter more, slide with his man. He'll get more deflections, more steals. And so, you know, there's a lot of ways to defend. And it's something I've always been interested in, you know, trying to figure out if there's a metric that would quantify defensive performance for both of those guys and could be versatile in a way that could be used both for big man and for guards. And I really don't know what the answer is for that. It's something that I've always been interested in, but I've never really found a good enough answer that I feel like the analytical community is really bought into.
Right. And even then, you know, you mentioned steals and steals isn't always the best indicator of defensive effectiveness either. You've got a guy who maybe gambles and gets out of position, you know, twice for every steal he gets and actually yields open shots and baskets from the guy he's guarding. So I would have to imagine that, you know, that sport view is going to be a big help in determining that. And, you know, and that's, there will probably be some subjectivity to that, right? In terms of, How can you know truly what the team's scheme called for in terms of where that player was positioned or how he was supposed to guard that person? But yeah, I agree. The defensive stats, that's a really interesting topic.
Yeah, no, I think one of the things that's important about it is that we're really in the early stages, as I said earlier, in analytics, especially for basketball. I mean, this is something that really has only been utilized over the past decade. or less. And so I feel like in the next 10, 20 years, we're going to really take steps forward in trying to analyze what players should be doing defensively, how can we help them get in the right position, things like that. So player tracking, especially with SportView and a number of other products, will be very useful for these teams, you know, once they start figuring out, you know, what we can do with this. And so it's important to ask these kinds of questions and know that there's always not going to be a perfect answer, and you just got to keep digging for it. And eventually maybe there's something there.
Yep. Yep. So looking forward to your talk at our conference in July. The topic of your talk is defeating the stigma of analytics. Just talk about what that stigma is and maybe give us a taste of how you think we can defeat that stigma of analytics.
So basically the stigma of analytics comes from the rift between the millennial era and the era that precedes it. So there's a lot of people that have been working in basketball for a long time, and they've gained a lot of experience. And so they really go from a field perspective. You know, I think that my player should be doing this, or we should use this lineup because this is what I think. And then we have the analytical community who is from, you know, my era, you know, who's more open to the statistics and, you know, going with different things that have been available only for a short amount of time. And so the stigma kind of comes from that. Where these older coaches and older, you know, development people are not necessarily willing to accept these numbers because they feel like their job is being done for them. You know, it's basically the idea that, you know, robots are taking over your job and all that. You know, the nerds are winning. And so, you know, I think that the stigma actually starts from the people like me who need to initiate this kind of contact and say, look, no, I don't have all the answers. I don't have the type of experience that you do. There are a lot of things that, you know, you can help me with because, you know, I'm looking at numbers, and so you might have a reason why this number says this. But at the same time, I think that if you can work together, there's a way that, you know, both the statistics and the feel can be implemented to where, you know, that combination can be really successful for teams in both making strategy and, you know, player development. Just there's a number of things that teams can really use this for. But I think that the stigma of, you know, that these nerds and, you know, these statistics are taking over the game, and so they're going to, you know, get rid of the basketball people. I think that that's wrong. I think that, you know, the best way to be effective with this is to combine basketball people with numbers people.
Definitely, definitely. So, you know, for a young man, you've accumulated quite a lot of experience in this field already. You know, what advice would you have? And maybe you get this already, questions from other people who aspire to work in this field. What kind of advice would you give for them?
I would definitely say one of the things that I've learned is to ask more questions than advice that you give. You know, I know for me, every time that I'm talking to a basketball person, I have really learned to ask questions rather than give my own input immediately. That's something that I do because, you know, I want to learn more. I understand that I'm only a 21-year-old kid that just graduated college. So, you know, there's so much for me to learn about the game of basketball. You know, I played competitively, but at the same time, I didn't play at a high level. And I'm always picking the brains of people that maybe play at a higher level, or they've been involved with player development or analytics or whatever it is, because, you know, I just want to continue to strive to get better. And I think if people do that, if you continue to ask questions of really smart people, pick their brains, you'll become smarter yourself. And eventually you'll be the one that, you know, people are asking questions to. And I think that's really how you grow.
That's great advice. That's what I'm trying to do with this podcast series, Johnny. Talk to people smarter than me and ask them good questions. And it's been fun talking to you today and learning a little bit more about you. And we're looking forward to learning more from your topic when you come to our conference on July 13th. Johnny, before we go, where can people find you online or follow you on social media?
So my Twitter handle is at Carver, C-A-R-V-E-R, Johnny, J-O-H-N-N-Y. You can also find me, our website, rankatology.com, I believe is still up, and you can find our book on Amazon as well.
Very good. So my guest today has been Johnny Carver of the University of Arkansas, and at the Great Lakes Analytics and Sports Conference, Johnny will be delivering a talk titled Defeating the Stigma of Analytics. Thanks for taking the time to speak with me today, Johnny.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Great. Thank you for listening. The Great Lakes Analytics and Sports Conference will be Thursday, July 13th at the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point. Visit www.uwsp.edu/analyticsconference for details. and make sure to follow us on Facebook and on Twitter at @analyticsconf. Thanks for your time.